If it's time to refinance, talk to BOQ. Visit boq.com.au/better.
Welcome to The Catch-Up. Some happy and sad news from Robin Bailey regarding our Deadpool list.
Well, happy because I'm now leading the Deadpool charge, but sad because someone died.
Sad for the Graham family.
Congratulations.
99.
Well done.
Thank you.
My favourite part of the show today was talking about one testicle.
Oh,
men with
wow.
one testicle. Fascinating.
Incredible, wasn't it? What about that bloke that copped the bullhorn in the nut?
Ooh,
out in the middle of nowhere.
Nearly bled to death.
We both just went there. Okay, Tom Gleason also was a guest on our show.
Absolutely. Heaps going on in the catch-up. Enjoy it.
Okay.
The PM has landed in the US, which means that Matthias Cormann is the acting Prime Minister. It would have been Barnaby Joyce, but something happened. I don't know.
What? Can't remember.
Can't remember now. And then Julie Bishop was unavailable as well. And so it's gone to the third drop, Matthias Cormann, which must make him very excited, you know. He came from another country. He's Belgian. He became an Australian citizen in the year 2000.
So what has he got to do? If anything needs opening, and does he sleep at the lodge or where?
If we need to declare war on New Zealand or...
If there's a natural disaster.
Oh, right. He takes the reins.
He's the front man.
In the Courier Mail, it says today that you can blog with him from 3 to 4.
Wow, busy.
They've got an email address there.
Yeah, it's couriermail.com.au.
Oh, good. So Matthias is available. Not many people know this, but here on The Big Breakfast, we have unfettered access to the PM, whether he's at Point Piper, The Lodge, or at Kirribilli. So we got to hear a conversation earlier this morning.
Hello, Acting Prime Minister Matthias Cormann speaking.
Hello, Matthias. It's Malcolm here. I'm in the US. How are things going as the Acting PM?
Well, Malcolm, I woke up this morning and I had put on some oompa-pa music. I had my traditional Bursa music to keep me regular. Then I saw a little titty shortens jogging past the lodge and I yelled out, "You are a vividly wobbly man. I can see your titties wobbling."
Good one, Matthias. Get it. Now, don't get too used to living in the lodge.
Well, actually, Malcolm, I'm getting really used to it. I'm wearing your loafers. Last night I drank some Sangiovese and I'm taking your kayak out for a row. I'm getting really comfortable. I'm loving the power. I'm sick on power. I've won the Prime Ministership, Malcolm. I'm going to form a coup.
Matthias, relax. You don't want people to think that you're a crazy Belgian.
Oh, sorry, Malcolm. Well, have a good time in the United States and don't hurry back. Bye now.
Right now we're going to discuss the very delicate issue of the pills, the plums, the crown jewels, the testicles, and...
Can I ask why?
Because yesterday we were discussing Lance Armstrong, a seven-time winner of the Tour de France.
Yeah, what's more important, the seven-time wins, the...
Or the fact that he's got one nut. Testicle.
These are and the conversations that happen while the music's on, let me just say.
I was hypothesising whether it would be easier to ride a bike with one nut rather than two because, you know, you don't have to separate or they're not rubbing on the seat.
Oh, my
and
God.
So we had a good one-nut conversation. Now, I've been studying... I've been studying overnight and I went to a website called... Average penis size.
Oh, please.
And they've got a list.
On the company computer? That'll be interesting.
I did Google average penis size. I Googled famous men with one testicle.
Oh, did you see that list?
Oh, it's a great list.
Could we go through that or not? Yeah,
well, at number 10, you've got Lance Armstrong, but I love this, that they've got the reason why he's got one nut, cancer, and then it's got under that balls, one. So there's a count.
Oh, nice. What about Hitler? Did you ever hear that?
Hitler.
When the Russians
only had one.
Yeah, British kids used to sing it, but the Russians did an autopsy and they said, nut, there was only one. Arnie, one.
Arnie?
One. They believe that's alleged because of the steroid loose. Bruce Lee.
One.
Rejected from the US Army, one nut.
Well, no wonder he could kick so high.
Green Day drummer Trey Cool lost his nut in a bike accident.
Mm.
Oh, gooseneck. Mm. Right on the test.
Yep.
I can contribute a little bit to this conversation because I have sons and one of them who will remain nameless.
And a
boyfriend. Twisted, yeah, well, that too. Twisted one of his testicles when he was little.
Oh.
And we were just playing on playground equipment and as we were walking home, he was like crying and saying it was really sore. And within probably an hour, it had swollen to like triple the size of the other one.
How do you get them? Is it like fishing line getting twisted? Do you just got to unwind them?
So we took him to emergency and they said, you had less than 24 hours to save it because if it starts to go black, it dies.
Oh. Yeah.
So these are not surprising me.
Every man listening right now is just giving his balls a bit of a check. Just going, are they still there? Are they good?
Yeah, here we go. But they can twist as young boys, I'm just saying.
And now, so there's a few people in here.
Napoleon,
that are
one nut.
Angry people, yeah. One
Mousy
nut,
tongue.
Napoleon.
Did you see that one? Mousy tongue.
Mark Latham, one nut.
Mark Latham? Yeah. What happened? How did he get his?
He lost it through cancer, and here it is. Balls count, one.
Yeah.
Hansi Cronje. Hansi Cronje.
Yeah, the great South African cricketer.
Disgraced South African cricketer, one nut. So I'm just wondering, if you've had to and you've got one, is life easier? Is it better? Or is it more difficult with
There'd
one
be more
nut?
Room, wouldn't there? Because that's often a problem. That's why blokes are always reorganising themselves, Robin, because there's not quite enough room. But if one's moved out.
And also, when you lose one to cancer, they sometimes put a prosthetic in. So you
do they?
That was my question.
Don't lose your balance.
Do it?
So your bag looks even.
Okay. It wouldn't be as noticeable as perhaps you'd need for a breast.
Tommy Redonigus.
Implant.
Yeah. One.
So we want to hear from you. Have you got one? And what's life like?
No one's got a ring.
What is life like living with only one testicle?
One nad. One of the boys, one of the danglers.
Okay,
one of
come on, mate.
Family jewels.
Okay. Would you feel, is it a bit like when a woman loses a breast, it feels like you've lost a bit of your identity?
Well, none of us have lost one, but some very famous people have. It might make you more outstanding as a human.
Let's find out. Greg.
Well, Tupac Shakur lost a nut.
Did he?
When he was shot in the groin.
Oh,
having your nut shot off.
Oh, my God.
That's a bullseye. Greg from Pacific Pines, have you lost one?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have. Working out west, north Queensland, chasing scrub bulls, clean skin bulls.
Yeah.
Flat out my horse, trying to turn the bull, and he turned all right. Knocked the horse on its bum, and, I was on my feet running, and he got me, threw me on the ground, and put his horn through me.
He horned you in the nut.
Yeah, he horned me in the nut, ripped my hip off. Yeah, I lost half my nut. I was actually holding it back in the end.
Oh, Jesus.
Was that the most excruciatingly painful thing?
No, sewing it up was.
Were you on your own?
No, I was with a mob, mate. They flew me out. The army came and picked me up in the helicopter and flew me to Townsville.
Wow.
So I was losing a fair bit of blood. So, yeah, they picked me up. They flew me into Townsville and sewed me up there.
So it's serious, but I reckon that when a man loses a nut, you do have to get the army out. I mean, it's serious.
Yeah. They were doing an exercise up there, so they got me out. But, it's not too bad. It's I only get half the itch now and half the time in the shower to wash it, but it's not too bad.
Okay. Do you still reorganise yourself like most blokes, or is it a lot more comfy downstairs?
Well, no, it sort of hangs in the middle, so I'm pretty happy.
Oh, wow.
Did you see what it looked like inside?
Oh, it was holding it in my hand.
Chicken nugget? What is it like?
It looked like an eyeball.
Did you get to keep it? You know how sometimes when they take stuff out of you, you get to keep it in a jar?
Why
not?
I want a nut sitting on my shelf looking at me, thanks. No.
And they don't try and save it like they do fingers that get taken off. Like, they don't try and put it on ice and then reattach it or something, do they?
Well, as a matter of fact, they were going to sew a finger on there, but I said, no, don't worry about it.
Wow, what a great story. You like telling the story?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I left home when I was 13 to work on properties in Queensland, and I've done it for 24 years.
Nice one.
Wow. Good on you. Thanks, Greg.
What a great story, Greg.
Okay, Michael of Brackenridge, you've lost yours recently.
Actually, 3 years ago. Okay.
Was it a bull's horn?
No, it was actually cancer.
Oh. Just the one?
Yeah, just the one.
They say with testicular cancer that often blokes don't check and it can get bad very quickly. How did you know that there was a problem?
Well, mine was actually the size of a softball when they took it out, when I finally saw the doctor about it.
Oh,
yeah, so finally. If there's any swelling downstairs, boys, get it checked out. Yeah. So did you leave it too long before going to the doctor, do you think?
Yeah, definitely left it far too long. You know, the male mentality is just, she'll be right. It'll go away.
But did you have a girlfriend or partner who said, geez, there's a bit of imbalance downstairs?
No, I was single at the time.
Okay.
Did it hurt, Michael?
Only if you sort of knocked it the wrong way. It was more uncomfortable than anything else. No pain, really.
What's been the biggest change to your life?
I guess for the first 9 months was looking down and nothing being there, just the one boy sitting by himself swinging in the breeze.
Hang on, 9 months. So then what, did you get something put in?
Yes, I had a prosthesis put in 9 months after my diagnostic.
Oh, God.
Look at me. I ask all
Who
the tough
makes
questions.
Them? Do you just get a marble? Like, you know, we used to play marbles. What did
Golf
you get?
Ball.
What is it?
Silicon. Silicon is basically made out of the same thing as breast implants, but just a version of it.
Does it feel funny?
Yeah, it feels very awkward, which is actually why it's coming out a week tomorrow.
Oh really?
Oh. Yeah.
So are you getting your prosthetic out and then another one in, or are you just done with it?
No, just done with it. Take it out. Just leave him swinging.
Okay, Michael, thanks for sharing your story. Greg as well, you're both going to go to take the family to Mini Golf, Golf Central, DFO, Brisbane Airport. Very quickly, Tim.
Very testicle free.
Hit a bag of balls.
Give you a ball and then they take it back away. Tim from Springfield Lakes very quickly had a mate with one ball. Yeah. They got a tattoo of a dollar sign on his testes to make it look like a money bag.
Oh, God. That's wonderful.
He didn't. That's an urban myth.
No,
we'll leave you with that. It's the Big Breakfast on Triple M.
The Deadpool.
Am I allowed to be excited?
No, stop. You got to explain it to everyone first
So this is the rules of the Deadpool. At the beginning of the year, we came up with a list of six people that we think are going to die this year. Mm-hmm. The one with the most deadies at the end of the year wins. And to qualify, those people's deaths have to be reported in the Courier Mail. Each month, we're going to add another celebrity we think is going to cark it this year. It's not disrespectful. It's just a way to play.
Engage.
And at 4:20 this morning, Robin Bailey made noises like she'd won Gold Lotto.
The reason being is because this guy was on my list.
Famed TV evangelist Billy Graham, who went from being a door-to-door salesman to selling the message of God to millions of Americans, has died.
Well, I'm more going off because of my competitive spirit and I'm
99.
The first one off. Yeah, he didn't make it to 100, poor bugger.
But 99, you've seen plenty.
Yeah. He's had
you're
a good
bored
life.
With it all by then. So, see you, mate.
Yeah, see you, mate. He was long suffering from cancer, pneumonia and other ailments.
He's better off getting you a head start on your list.
Yeah, and he died at his home in North Carolina. If you don't know, I mean, he was kind of really famous in the 50s and 60s, sounded like this.
I say to you as Christians today, love one another.
What's that?
He's clearly in China or Korea.
Obviously
Korea.
Bilingual.
Beg your pardon.
Now, I thought
it was in a Seven Samurai movie. No,
do you know what, though? He brought his Christian message to 185 countries. That's pretty impressive.
And wonderful.
He is responsible for some of the biggest crowds ever assembled in this country, too.
Do you know at the exhibition ground, 60,000 people went and saw him in the late 50s.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the Queen was a mate of his.
Yeah, you knew that from watching the crowd.
What's the crown? All right, you're one up.
Yes!
So what happens now?
One.
I get another one. Don't I?
Yes, you get to replace that one, Billy Graham, with another one. And then when March starts, we all get another one to add to the... So far, we start with six. We start with five and we're added the February one. And you are ahead, Robin.
First time I've played. Was it okay for her to celebrate the way she did?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Well, I was celebrating because I was beating you two.
Yes. That's
not because I was happy that poor old Billy Graham had died. Although, as we said, 99, that's a good innings. Yeah. I think I'm going to put Clive James on my list.
That is good.
Yeah, media commentator. Lived in the UK
since
1962.
Well.
No, he does.
He's got cancer.
Yeah, he's got cancer and liver failure. And
easy target. You're just picking easy targets.
You're really
low hanging fruit, Robin.
Well, I've got Donald Trump. That's a wild card.
Oh, that's not bad.
On my list.
We wish.
Yeah. And
hopefully you're anyway.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
I don't know what you say.
You're going well. You're really in form.
Well, Billy, if there's a heaven, Billy will be there right now.
Having a chat.
No delay.
Great eulogy.
Just the best you can come up with.
Triple M, the Big Breakfast.
See you, mate.
Big Breakfast Crime Squad. I think we all. Yeah, thank you. We all know we've been pretty busy this year helping the overworked boys in blue.
That gives us such credibility that I really don't feel weird.
Do it again.
Serious.
Tell you what, Martin, you got to hit the street. I want some numbers.
Well, the simple fact was, Everyone had to hit the streets last night. And I want to say you're all looking well after a big night on road policing. And Robert, you normally sit behind the desk and just distribute orders to everybody.
Yeah.
Are you the district commissioner? Finally, she got out there last night. And I tell you what, when the testosterone starts flowing through you, when you've got one of the perps in your sides, you go crazy. Robert! Robin.
Robin.
Right.
You had your block out too.
Yeah. What about the moon when he, well, you were staying fairly calm.
Oh, negative is going wrong, right?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, well done, mate. Well done, well
and?
Done. Yeah. Well, you'll probably see this on Channel 9 most of the day today.
Guns drawn, officers
Martin Bailey and Moon Man
make a dramatic arrest to end a hunt that started in the early hours.
Well done. And well done, me.
That was a late night.
Boys just going down the medium strip again onto the opposite side of the road, proceeding inbound.
Good start.
That is me. There's me again.
He's trying to line us up for a ram, but standby,
Vicar. So I was going to ram it, and then Robin said, hold on, I've got the gun ready.
What were we doing again?
We were chasing this this bloke who was in a ute, and he was going crazy. He'd stolen it. Oh, don't you remember?
Yeah, he'd stolen a jet ski.
No, a ute.
Oh,
you guys
a ute.
Are all idiots.
Were you even there?
And Brendo, did we take anything down to the lab for you to analyse?
No, this was Brendo.
861, all units stand down, one in custody.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Job done.
Took
Thank
all the
you.
Glory.
Yeah. Stand down.
Went through the drive-thru afterwards at McDonald's. Robin, what do you want? Calm your phone.
I found this very, very interesting. We're learning so much more about our new cast member, Lawrence Moonman Mooney. Mm-hmm. And Mooney, you co-sleep with your kids.
Yes. My first marriage, we slept with Lily until she was 6 years of age.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. You're never going to have another kid if you keep doing this.
Well, now Maggie is in the bed between me and Lou, and she has been for the 5 years of her short life.
Oh, every night?
Yes, she's right in there, and she's becoming very difficult to move.
So was that from birth?
That was from birth, and pretty much it was, I guess a bit lazy parenting in that we just weren't prepared to, just rock her back to sleep in her own room. So it's like, get her in here. And then it just became a thing. And we liked it too. It's cozy and it's fun. And I love having those little, little legs behind me. But most people go, well, what about your relationship? And I think that that's probably the biggest problem. You don't get to cuddle your wife because there's a child in the way. So you've got to make other arrangements. Kitchen, lounge room.
Hang on. Can I just? So she always sleeps in between you.
Yes, and
that's amazing.
And, some people say it's crazy. For example, you two.
Yeah, we're trying to be supportive, and I hate actually.
You
ever...
don't have to be supportive. You can say you're out of your mind, or
you're out of your mind.
We actually love it, and I reckon we. Also, and these, this is the Moon Man's tests here. We think it's better for the child. We think that it makes for a happier child because, you don't want a baby screaming down the corridor or crying themselves back to sleep. I think that that's traumatic. Oh,
don't they have to learn how to cope and to be able to soothe themselves?
Controlled crying?
Yeah, well, she's pretty calm now. I mean, there will
come
a point.
Because she's sleeping between her parents. But when does it stop?
Well, hopefully soon. We decorated her room and she's starting to, see the attraction of it. And maybe it will just naturally evolve that she goes, do you know what? I want to go and sleep in my own room.
Okay, so you said this is the second time you've done it. So your eldest daughter is now 18. When did she move out of the bed?
Well, I moved out of that bed before she did.
Oh, my God.
And out of that house.
Okay. Sorry, so the relationship broke down.
That was probably good for her then.
Got it.
But when she was staying with me and Lou, she was about six when she moved out of the bed. And we had to put a bed beside our bed so she could sleep in it. And then she moved down the
corridor. Hang on, so you're saying that she moved in with your new wife into your bed?
Yeah, well, that's what she was used to. So she would sleep between us two as well.
Wow.
You're getting weirder.
Okay.
No, that, which I think was actually quite a nice bonding experience
for Lou
and my daughter to, you know, be able to share a bed together. I think that was sweet. You know, we're all in the same family.
Maybe you're doing it right. Maybe. Well, hang on.
You've not done breakfast radio hours before, though, have you?
I did way back in my first marriage. This is my second go at it. In fact, history's really repeating itself.
But did you do it when you had a child? Because that would be one reason why I could never, ever, ever have adopted this as a theory. Because my lifestyle was, I mean, I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You can't put the lights on and wake a small child.
No, but do you turn the lights on in your room?
Yeah.
My clothes laid out the night before. I know exactly where everything's going. But, yeah, the alarm goes off at 3:30. It doesn't wake Lou or Maggie up.
Oh.
But it does wake Rupert up. His tail starts thumping the bed.
Yeah, the dog.
Oh, so the dog's in there as well. We didn't ask about the fur baby.
Oh, of course. Rupert's in there, but he gets too hot about halfway through the night hear him jump up and then trundle off downstairs.
Can I just ask
him?
We are going to 133353.
It's a busy bedroom. It's a filthy doona.
I just want to know about whether you can or cannot have kids in a bed. But is this part of attached parenting? Like, are you doing it as a whole movement?
No, we're not part of that, but I have read that
it's a thing.
Attached parenting is, you know, very good for the child. They have a lower resting heart rate. They breathe. They have
is that breastfeeding till they're 10
problems.
And stuff?
Well, yes,
that's right.
Sometimes
those people walking up and just helping yourself. I reckon that's let's not confuse the issue with breastfeeding.
No. Okay, so let's open this.
The Big Breakfast's can of worms.
So Marto and I are saying you can't have kids in your bed.
I didn't think so.
I love the idea, actually. I think it just is warm and feels secure and it's lovely. And, in fact, raise the size of the bed too so everyone can get a bit more bed. We've got a king now and Maggie is very comfortable in the middle there.
Actually, there's plenty of room in a king. So in terms of that, you're not squished up with three humans.
Yeah. And it is pretty cute listening to her have a little jibber-jabber in the middle of the night too.
What's the psychological theories?
My psychological theory is that it gives the child, you know, a bit more safety and security until they decide to get out of the bed themselves. But it's homespun psychology
Let's find out.
I've got hippie mates of mine. Their four kids lasted until the last one was 15 and then finally they started to leave. So they had six.
What?
They're on the floors. They're everywhere. Yeah.
15-year-old in the bed with you?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And they had more than one bedroom. Like, I don't understand if you lived in a one-bedroom place and somehow you had an incredibly big... it's weird. And the problem is, the longer it goes, the harder it is to stop, isn't it?
Well, you wanted to know from a professional's perspective. Right. Dean of Forest Lake, your wife is, you say, a shrink. What do you reckon about this?
Yeah, she's a psychologist and she says it's really bad for the kid because they think they're number one because they're in the middle and they grow up to be entitled brats. Because, you know, mum and dad are second. Mine needs a fist. Really bad. Really bad.
You're not going to agree with that.
Entitled brat. There are some symptoms of entitled brat bubbling to the surface, I'm going to say.
But, it's never too late to change.
But that's also about, you know, parenting beyond the bed and beyond sleep time.
So is that like the theory that they have with Caesar Millan, the dog expert, who says that if you allow dogs into your bed and on your couches, then they see themselves as equal?
The same. You've got to keep them down there. They want to know where they sit in the pack, dogs.
But I reckon as pack creatures, you invite them into the pack and then if you've got them in the laundry or outside, you're telling them they're not part of the pack.
Hey, Moon.
So, yeah.
Uncross your arms.
Mm. Oh, I've got a bit defensive.
Yes, you have.
Is that aircon on you? That aircon must be.
No.
Don't you tell me what to do.
Brett of Strathpine, what do you reckon?
How are you?
Yeah,
yes, Moon Man, I'm right behind you, Moon Man.
Mate, it's
a fantastic experience. Mate, it creates a huge bond between father and child, for one.
Yep.
My young fella, Jake, he stayed in our room, slept between me and the missus for about 7 years from the day he was come home. He actually turns 18 next Wednesday, would you believe? And when he comes over to stay at my place, where does he sleep? He sleeps beside the bed. Put him one of them trundle out beds under my bed there, and that's where he sleeps, mate. And we've got the best bond you would not believe, mate. Nice.
That's good.
Is he an entitled brat?
Oh, absolutely not, mate. No, he's got the hugest heart, mate. You know, like, I couldn't ask for a better son, mate, to be quite honest.
Oh, you've cheered him up, Brett. That's a lovely call.
I've uncrossed my arms now.
And Karen of the Sunny Coast, what do you think about kids sleeping in your bed?
I love to hear of men being nurturing and gentle and have that softness, but are we really raising kids to be resilient and independent? Like, that's an imperative life skill. And to have that dependency of not only through the day, but at night, we're together, we're sleeping together. Are we really setting them up for independence?
Yeah, but when do you reckon you can split them up? I think it sounds all right until you're 6 or 7, now I think about it.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but are these the kids that start school and can't leave mum's leg and are hanging on for dear life because they're afraid to be on their own? And, you know, we've got more kids with anxiety and we're getting kids with mental illnesses at a younger age.
A child, pushed away, could just as easily develop anxiety. But Maggie, and maybe it's case by case, she's a very resilient, independent young woman. She doesn't mind marching.
All right, what happens, Moon, I'll throw one at you. What happens when you have your next child?
Well, it's time for Maggie to go, and she knows that.
But see, here's the thing, and I'm just going to say this, and I can't believe of all of us, I'm the one that's saying it, but night times in my bed is for my partner and myself, not for my kids. And with having had children attached to me from birth until they went to school, that time alone in my space was so sacred.
I'm with you. My wife would never allow it, but I would have loved it.
Really?
Yeah, for me.
I like
for blokes
snuggling.
Better. Well, we don't get them as close to you all day as mums, as dads. They'd like the kids close at night time. I was always a big fan of when the kids came in.
Oh, no.
Well, according to our callers, that is incorrect. 75% of our callers this morning say it's fine to have kids in the bed. They side with Moon.
Wow. Yep. Okay, there you go. I learned something.
Carry on.
You're winning.
Myth busted. No, I'm Brisbane's Triple M, the big breakfast.
Is that the saddest thing we'll see all day? Chris Lynn, the images of him walking off last night with a dislocated shoulder, knowing that his $1.8 million IPL contract in jeopardy.
Okay, take about 4 steps back. So last night, 2020 final against
New Zealand at Eden Park, which is a tiny football field. So we ended up winning, and
in
New Zealand, yeah.
Right, okay. And Chris Lynn, who's a great Queenslander and a friend of the show, has hurt his shoulder. And this was how the commentator said it last night. Now, I know AB is there. Who was the New Zealand guy?
Ian Smith, former wicketkeeper for New Zealand.
Okay.
Although he's landed on the ball, I think. That might hurt. That just might hurt a bit. He's had terrible shoulder problems, AB. Terrible shoulder problems.
He has, and he's been told not to dive.
Right. So you're being told not to dive, but you're playing for Australia.
All right.
Yep. And you dive. And then you hurt yourself.
And then you can't go to India or the Pakistan Premier League.
So just imagine being Chris Lynn this morning. You wake up, you're in pain because you've injured yourself. You're facing the possible end to your career and the loss of that huge amount of money. He must be in a world of pain.
Hold on. Let's call in Sam Hargraves, our sports guy.
Sammy.
Now, your mates of Lenny's, do you have any contact?
Yeah, I sent him a text this morning. Obviously, we saw what happened last night, and it's his right shoulder. So his left shoulder was the one that he had a reconstruction on.
That's
right. It's his good shoulder.
So therefore, so this AB is his good shoulder. Talking about that. Yes, he probably shouldn't dive at all, but God, he's a cricketer. So that's why he was late starting the BBL for the Heat, because his shoulder wasn't quite right, and then he rushed it and did his hammy and calf slightly. So he's had a tough old run. So this is now both shoulders.
He has, and he's an all-or-nothing guy. So he was listening to what the doctor said, but he dived on the other shoulder, so he thought he was doing the right thing and protecting himself, but he's not going to not dive when he's playing for Australia in a final. So I texted him this morning and just said, what's the diagnosis, mate? Are you okay? And he got back to me pretty quickly and just said, look, I'll find out on Friday. I've got a scan in Brisbane. It's not looking good. I won't read the next word. Depressing is what it is. So he's really hurting at the moment. He won't be going to the Pakistan Super League.
So he was supposed to go to Pakistan. How much? He was probably on tour and 300,000 there, wasn't he?
Yeah, that pays pretty well. I don't know the exact figures there.
Not as much as the Indian.
The big one is the IPL, the Indian Premier League, which he went at auction for $1.8 million. He's still a chance to play in that. It'll all depend on the scans and see how much damage is done. It's really, luckily, I mean, there's no luck in it, but it's his better shoulder. So hopefully If it was his bad shoulder, he'd be no good, but there's still a chance, and hopefully, fingers crossed, he will get to India.
If anything, he's too good a bloke, because right yeah. now there's other people like Glenn Max are thinking about it, and some and Brendan McCullum, who plays for the Heat, New Zealand master blaster as well. They now go around. There's one in South Africa. There's a Premier League, like a T20 competition for 6 weeks here. South Africa, Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, Caribbean. Stop me at some stage. I think England. Do they have one? No, they don't have one.
That's part of their. County cricket season.
So Linny could have said no to Australia, but they kept asking. Come on, mate, just play for the T20 side. Come on, play for the one day side, the 50 over side. Mm. He could have just done this rotation and worked for 30 weeks of the year and probably $3 million a year out of all those things. And
so, is this career ending?
Nah, it'll take a while to get over it though.
Okay.
That's an 8 month recovery for if he has to have it a complete reconstruction.
Whoa. So is it fair to say he really was at the peak of his career?
So
arguably the best T20 batsman in Australia. He's been the player of the tournament, I think, three times in the Big Bash, and this is devastating for him. But there's a scan on Friday, as we know. And look, he's such a great guy. He's always puts his hand up to come on. I said, do you want to have a chat this morning? He said, no, not this morning, mate. So he's really hurting at the moment, and we're all thinking of him because he's a great bloke.
Well, there's a lot of acts descending on Brisbane for the Brisbane Comedy Festival. It starts tomorrow, Friday the 23rd, and one of those acts has been described as if there was such an event at the mythical Comedy Olympics, Gleeson could take on hecklers for Australia. It is, in fact, Tom Gleeson.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, Tom. How is Sure Thing travelling? It's the show that you're bringing to Brisbane.
Well, the good news is I don't use Brisbane as a rag to polish up my gold to get it ready for Melbourne. That's not how I work. I use Perth.
Oh, good.
I would have already done it in Adelaide by then, so it'll be up and running and it'll be sharp as.
And now talk about sharpening it up in Perth. Was there much gear you had to drop? And how is that moment when there's no laugh and you go, ooh, gotta get rid of that bit?
Well, I'm a little bit of a sneaky performer, like the Moon Man. I have a way of saying a line, and then if it doesn't get a laugh, I make it sound like that was going somewhere else, and then I move on to another line, and then that one gets a laugh. And I hope that the audience doesn't notice. Moon Man's very good at it.
Isn't he?
Refuse to accept the flop.
I never say a line, and I never say a line, and then land on a full stop, and then just stare at the audience as if to look at them and say, this is where I thought you'd laugh. I like to think I don't send any clues like that. I've mastered my stand-up body language.
Can you pick? Now, here's a question for comedians. Can you pick if a night's going to be good or not? And is it based on how you feel or the kind of energy you're getting from the audience?
Sometimes I feel like you can pick it right at the top with how much the audience applauses. When they're really excited, you know it's going to just be a great night because they push that energy up on stage. So we're pretty needy, you know. When we get that good feeling back, we tend to push a little bit harder.
You do tend to have a little bit of a tester joke, like a little teaser pony canary in the mine, and you throw that out early, and if that doesn't go too well, you think, oh, we've got to dig deep here, don't we?
Yeah, there's always a joke that you've got early in your set, often that might be just a little bit clever. It might just imply something or require the audience to do a bit of the thinking for themselves. And I had one of those jokes, and I did it at the Comedy Store in Sydney a couple of years ago. And I told the audience at the time, I said, that is the longest I've ever had to wait for an audience to laugh. You are no doubt the thickest audience I've ever performed to in my life.
How did that go down for the rest of the hour?
I don't know. They seem to enjoy it, which is weird. It's a talent I have.
Moon said you're one of the great returners of serve from a heckler. Like, if I came at you that night and said, mate, I've heard funnier farts, what would you do?
Oh, I'd point out that's a cliched line to start with.
I already feel small. You got me.
But I like to take each line on its merits. And here's a little clue for you, okay? If anyone wants to come to the stand-up show and you heckle me, right?
Yeah.
Here's a clue. This is actually how you heckle a comedian. This is the best way. It's a fail-safe. What you do is you turn up with your own microphone and your own stage and your own lines. And you set it up at the back of the venue, and what you do is, during the comedian show, you start to do a better show, because there is nothing more irritating than having a better comedy show inside your show. That is devastating. I mean, it requires a lot of effort.
It's complex. Okay,
some could argue it requires being a comedian. But
yes.
You do that, and that would that would be annoying.
Tom Gleeson bringing his new show, Sure Thing, Brisbane Comedy Festival from March 22nd to the 24th. Comedy.com.au for tickets. And Hard Quiz is back on the ABC too this year. Very happy that's back as well. Tom Gleeson, looking forward to seeing you when you're up here, mate.
Oh, thank you so much.